The Mystery of Edwin Drood by Charles Dickens. Chapter 5. Mr. Duddles and Friend. John Jasper, on his way home through the close, is brought to a standstill by the spectacle of Stony Duddles, dinner bundle and all, leaning his back against the iron railing of the burial ground, enclosing it from the old cloister arches, and a hideous small boy in rags, flinging stones at him as a well-defined mark in the moonlight. Sometimes the stone hit him, and sometimes they miss him, but Duddle seems indifferent to either fortune. The hideous small boy, on the contrary, whenever he hits Duddles, blows a whistle of triumph through a jagged gap convenient for the purpose in the front of his mouth, where half his teeth are wanting, and whenever he misses him, yelps out, "Maldegin!" and tries to atone for the failure by taking a more correct and vicious aim. "What are you doing to the man?" demands Jasper, stepping out into the moonlight from the shade. "Making a cock shy of him," replies the hideous small boy. "Give me those stones in your hand."
"Yes, I'll give 'em you down your throat if you come a-catching a hold of me,"
says the small boy, shaking himself loose and backing.
"I'll smash your eye if you don't look out."
"Baby devil that you are, what has the man done to you?"
"He won't go home."
"What is that to you?"
"He gives me a penny to pelt him home if I catches him out too late," says the boy, and then
chants like a little savage, half stumbling and half dancing among the rags and laces of his dilapidated boots.
"Witty, witty, when I catches him out of 10, witty, witty, why, then he don't go, then I shy. Witty, witty, wake cock warning!"
With a comprehensive sweep of the last word and one more delivery at Duddles. This would seem to be a poetical note of preparation agreed upon as a caution to Duddles to stand clear if he can or to betake himself homeward. John Jasper invites the boy with a beck of his head to follow him, feeling it hopeless to drag him or coax him, and crosses to the iron railing where the stony and stoned one is profoundly meditating. "Do you know this thing, this child?" asks Jasper, at a loss for a word that will define this thing.
"Deputy," says Duddles with a nod.
"Is that it's his name?"
"Deputy,"
assents Duddles.
"I'm a servant up at the Traveller's Twopenny in Gasworks Garding," this thing explains. "All of us men servants at Travellers' Lodgings is named Deputy. When we're clock full and the Travellers is all abed, I come out for my elf."
Then withdrawing into the road and taking aim, he resumes.
"Witty, witty, when I catches him out of 10.
"Hold your hand," cries Jasper, "and don't throw while I stand so near him, or I'll kill you. Come, Duddles, let me walk you home tonight. Shall I carry your bundle?"
"Not on any account," replies Duddles, adjusting it.
"Duddles was making his reflections here when you come up, sir, surrounded by his works like a popular author, your own brother-in-law,"
introducing a sarcophagus within the railing, white and cold in the moonlight.
"Mrs. Sapsey,"
introducing the monument of that devoted wife.
"Late incumbent,"
introducing the reverend gentleman's broken column.
"Departed assessed taxes,"
introducing a vase and towel standing on what might represent the cake of soap.
"Former pastry cook and muffin maker, much respected,"
introducing gravestone.
"All safe and sound here, sir, and all Duddle's work. Of the common folk that is merely bundled up in turf and brambles, the less is said the better. A poor lot soon forgot."
"This creature, deputy, is behind us," says Jasper, looking back. "Is he to follow us?" The relations between Duddles and deputy are of a capricious kind, for on Duddles turning himself about with the slow gravity of beery suddenness, deputy makes a pretty wide circuit into the road and stands on the defensive.
"You never cried witty warning before you begun tonight," says Duddles, unexpectedly reminded of or imagining an injury.
"Yeah, I did," says Deputy, in his only form of polite contradiction.
"Own brother, sir," observes Duddles, turning himself about again,
and as unexpectedly forgetting his offense as he had recalled or conceived it.
"Own brother to Peter the Wild Boy, but I gave him an object in life."
"At which he takes aim," Mr. Jasper suggests.
"That's it, sir," returns Duddles, quite satisfied. "At which he takes aim. I took him in hand and gave him an object. What was he before? A destroyer. What work did he do? Nothing but destruction. What did he earn by it? Short terms in Cloister M. jail. Not a person, not a piece of property, not a winder, not a horse, nor a dog, nor a cat, nor a bird, nor a fowl, nor a pig, but what he stoned for want of an enlightened object. I put that enlightened object before him, and now he can turn his honest halfpenny by the 3 pennyworth a week."
"I wonder he has no competitors."
"He has plenty, Mr. Jasper, but he stones them all away. Now, I don't know what this scheme of mine comes to,"
pursues Duddles, considering about it with the same sudden gravity.
"I don't know what you may precisely call it. It ain't a sort of a scheme of a national education."
"I should say not," replies Jasper.
"I should say not," assents Duddle. "Then we won't try to give it a name."
"He still keeps behind us," repeats Jasper, looking over his shoulder. "Is he to follow us?"
"We can't help going round by the traveller's twopenny. If we go the short way, which is the back way," Duddles answers, "and we'll drop him there."
So they go on. Deputy, as a rear rank one, taking open order and invading the silence of the hour and place by stoning every wall, post, pillar, and other inanimate object by the deserted way. "Is there anything new down in the crypt, Duddles?" asks John Jasper.
"Anything old, I think you mean," growls Duddles. "It ain't a spot for novelty."
"Any new discovery on your part, I mean?"
"There's an old one under the 7th pillar on the left as you go down the broken steps of the little underground chapel that formerly was. I make him out, so far as I've made him out yet, to be one of them old uns with a crook. To judge from the size of the passages in the walls and of the steps and doors by which they come and went, them crooks must have been a good deal in the way of the old uns. 2 of them, meetin' promiscuous, must have hitched one another by the mitre pretty often, I should say."
Without any endeavor to correct the literality of this opinion, Jasper surveys his companion, covered from head to foot with old martyr, lime, and stone grit, as though he, Jasper, were getting imbued with a romantic interest in his weird life. "Yours is a curious existence." Without furnishing the least clue to the question whether he receives it as a compliment or as quite the reverse, Duddles gruffly answers,
"Yours is another."
"Well, inasmuch as my lot is cast in the same old earthy, chilly, never-changing place, yes. But there is much more mystery and interest in your connection with the cathedral than in mine. Indeed, I am beginning to have some idea of asking you to take me on as a sort of student or free apprentice under you, and to let me go about with you sometimes and see some of these odd nooks in which you pass your days." The stony one replies in a general way,
"All right. Everybody knows where to find Duddles when he's wanted." Which, if not strictly true, is approximately so, if taken to express that Duddles may always be found in a state of vagabondage somewhere.
"What I dwell upon most," says Jasper, pursuing his subject of romantic interest, "is the remarkable accuracy with which you would seem to find out where people are buried. What is the matter? That bundle is in your way. Let me hold it." Duddles has stopped and backed a little. Deputy, attentive to all his movements, immediately skirmishing into the road, and was looking about for some ledge or corner to place his bundle on when thus relieved of it.
"Just you give me my hammer out of that," says Duddles, "and I'll show you."
Clunk, clunk, and his hammer is handed him.
"Now look here, you pit your note, don't you, Mr. Jasper?"
"Yes."
"So I sound for mine. I take my hammer and I tap."
Here he strikes the pavement and the attentive deputy skirmishes at a rather wider range, as supposing that his head may be in requisition.
I tap, 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 solid. I go on tapping, solid still. Tap again, hollow, hollow. Tap again, persevering, solid and hollow. Tap, tap, tap to try it better. Solid and hollow, and inside solid, hollow again. There you are. Old one crumbled away in stone coffin and vault.
Astonishing.
I have even done this, says Duddle, drawing out his 2-foot rule.
Deputy, meanwhile skirmishing nearer, as suspecting that treasure may be about to be discovered, which may somehow lead to his own enrichment, and the delicious treat of the discoverers being hanged by the neck on his evidence until they are dead.
Say that hammer of mine's a wall. My work. 2, 4, and 2 is 6.
Measuring on the pavement,
6 foot inside that wall is Mrs. Sapsy.
Not really, Mrs. Sapsy.
Say, Mrs. Sapsy, her wall's thicker, but say, Mrs. Sapsy.
Duddles taps the wall represented by that hammer and says, after a good sounding,
something betwixt us.
Sure enough, some rubbish has been left in that same 6-foot space by Duddles' men. Jasper opines that such accuracy is a gift.
I wouldn't have it as a gift, returns Duttles, by no means receiving the observation in good part. I worked it out for myself. Duttles come by his knowledge through grubbing deep for it and having it up by the roots when it don't want to come. Hallo, you deputy!
Whitty! Is deputy's shrill response, standing off again.
Catch that half a penny, and don't let me see any more of you tonight after we come to the Traveler's Twopenny.
Warning! Returns deputy, having caught the half penny, and appearing by this mystic word to express his assent to the arrangement. They have but to cross what was once the vineyard, belonging to what was once the monastery, to come into the narrow back lane wherein stands the crazy wooden house of 2 low stories, currently known as the Traveler's Twopenny, a house all warped and distorted, like the morals of the travelers, with scant remains of a latticework porch over the door, and also a rustic fence before its stamped-out garden. By reason of the travelers being so bound to the premises by a tender sentiment, or so fond of having a fire by the roadside in the course of the day, that they can never be persuaded or threatened into departure without violently possessing themselves of some wooden forget-me-not and bearing it off. The semblance of an inn is attempted to be given to this wretched place by fragments of conventional red curtaining in the windows, which rags are made muddily transparent in the night season by feeble lights of rush or cotton dip burning duly in the close air of the inside. As Duddles and Jasper come near, they are addressed by an inscribed paper lantern over the door, setting forth the purport of the house. They are also addressed by some half-dozen other hideous small boys, whether twopenny lodgers or followers or hangers-on or of such, who knows, who, as if attracted by some carrion scent of deputy in the air, start into the moonlight as vultures might gather in the desert and instantly fall to stoning him and one another.
"Stop, you young brutes!" cries Jasper angrily, "and let us go by!"
This remonstrance, being received with yells and flying stones, according to a custom of late years, comfortably established among the police regulations of our English communities, where Christians are stoned on all sides, as if the days of St. Stephen were revived, Duddle's remarks of the young savages with some point,
"They haven't got an object,"
and leads the way down the lane. At the corner of the lane, Jasper, hotly enraged, checks his companion and looks back. All is silent. Next moment, a stone coming rattling at his hat, and a distant yell of, "Wake cock! Warning!" followed by a crow, as from some infernally hatched chanticleer, prizing him under whose victorious fire he stands, he turns the corner into safety and takes Duddles home. Duttles, stumbling among the litter of his stony yard as if he were going to turn head foremost into one of the unfinished tombs. John Jasper returns by another way to his gatehouse, and entering softly with his key, finds his fire still burning. He takes from a locked press a peculiar-looking pipe, which he fills, but not with tobacco, and having adjusted the contents of the bowl very carefully with a little instrument, ascends an inner staircase of only a few steps leading to two rooms. One of these is his own sleeping chamber, the other is his nephew's. There is a light in each. His nephew lies asleep, calm and untroubled. John Jasper stands looking down upon him, his unlighted pipe in his hand, for some time with a fixed and deep attention. Then, hushing his footsteps, he passes to his own room, lights his pipe, and delivers himself to the spectress it invokes at midnight. End of chapter. Read by Leonidas for Lit to Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.